Welcome to episode 139 of the Microsoft Cloud IT Pro Podcast, recorded live August 20th, 2019. This is a show about Office 365 and Azure from the perspective of IT pros and end users, where we discuss the topic or recent news and how it relates to you. In today's episode, we get you caught up on what we've been up to and some news around what we have coming up this fall. Then we get into Azure Migrate V2 and some of the recent changes to that Azure service. Rainy, stormy, Wednesday after, no, Tuesday afternoon.
Tuesday. It is another day of the week that ends in Y. And then you shrug your shoulders and go, really? We're doing it again?
And it's raining again. Apparently when we record, it's supposed to rain in the Sunshine State, which I'm pretty sure we have discussed before.
Yeah, you know, stuff happens. I spent the weekend in Key Largo while it was all rainy and crappy up here. So I decided to go down to the Florida Keys and hang out on a boat and work on my geek suntan. So now I am a nice shade of lobster red, as opposed to a nice shade of pale, not lobster red.
Very nice. I saw your pictures and I didn't read where you were, and you were commenting about how nice the weather was. And I was like, wow, there's a big difference between the beach in Jacksonville and away from the beach in Jacksonville. And then I saw you were down in the Keys and it all made sense.
I have a bit of a pro tip for you. If you ever go down to the Keys, so like I said, we were in Key Largo, which is hour and a half, hour and 15 minutes, give or take, south of Miami, Fort Lauderdale. So we flew into Fort Lauderdale because the tickets were a little bit cheaper and it wasn't too bad. So we went to rent a car because now we've got to drive down to Key Largo, as you do.
You realize you could have just driven from Jacksonville.
I could have, but I'm not into that kind of thing. So yeah, 7-hour drive wasn't my cup of tea.
I was going to say, some people don't realize, like, to drive from here, and if you're going all the way down to Key West, I think it's like a 10 or 11 hour drive, and you never leave the state.
Florida is a big state, deceivingly large.
So you did fly, because that is still a significant drive.
All that being said, I went to look up rental cars. Typically, I do Hertz for work, so it's like, cool, I'll just look at Hertz and see if I've got any points and see what's going on. So I pull up the list of rental cars, and, you can do whatever, Ford Focus or, a Toyota Corolla, things like that. And I'm looking at the prices for everything. I said, well, I'm kind of going down for a quick trip. Don't need anything like big. We're only going to have one carry-on. It's going to be pretty easy. So let's just sort by price, kind of do the lowest to highest kind of thing. So sorted by price, and it turned out that for $4 more a day, I could upgrade from the regular mid-size car to a Mustang convertible. And I was like,
oh, nice.
Sold. Done. Mustang convertibles are not very nice cars, but it was nice to have a convertible and be down in the Florida Keys. So pro tip, when you're going,
it is nicer than a lot of mid-size cars.
Check the price for the convertibles. They may or may not work in your favor.
I thought you were going to say a minivan was the cheapest or something. That would have been funny.
No. And had it been the cheapest, I absolutely would have taken it. There's no shame there. I just needed a car that could get me from A to B.
Wonderful. Well, and you probably went from A to B and then just stayed at B for the entire time and didn't get back in the car because B was the beach, or did you drive around?
Gotta go out to eat at night and things like that. And it's lobster season, so you gotta go have some lobster. And then because you're sitting on the ocean, maybe you have to have like a Mai Tai or a Pina Colada or 6 or 7 margaritas. Life comes at you fast.
Yes. Well, you had a much more relaxing weekend than I did. Redid the floors in 3 of the bedrooms in our house on Friday. So Thursday night, and one of those being my office, and I spent Thursday night emptying out 3 bedrooms. I spent Friday working downstairs at the kitchen table while they were pounding away on the floors above me. And then I spent all day Saturday putting the rooms back together again.
It just kind of feels cyclical, doesn't it?
Yes, and my office is still a disaster. But the floor is much better. It's a nice, solid floor. We went with the luxury vinyl plank and no more old builder's carpet that was raggedy and all of that.
Gotcha. So you got to migrate out of your office and then just go ahead and turn around and migrate right back in. You just rehosted yourself.
I did. I rehosted myself onto luxury vinyl plank floors.
Nice. So there was a little bit of a transformation in there. It just wasn't digital.
There was. Yes. And I've taken some exams. I don't know how I started doing this. I decided to start taking like the MS-300 and 100 and AZ-100 and went on like this exam binge. And then all of a sudden realized I'm like an exam away or two exams away from some mouthful of a certificate. The Microsoft 365 Certified Enterprise Administrator Expert. Say that five times fast. So
I don't even know what you said one time once. It's a lot to take in.
I don't really know what this means other than I'm an expert in enterprise administration with Microsoft 365, as I suppose. But I passed my SharePoint hybrid exam this morning. And truth be told, I did not even know what exam I was taking this morning. I threw it on my calendar and said, go take an exam at this location. And I showed up and sat down and I was like, huh, I wonder which one I'm taking today. Turns out it was SharePoint hybrid.
There's no better way to start your day than with a random exam in the morning, I guess.
Yeah, why prep for it? So now I just have my Microsoft 365 Mobility and Security Exam, MS-101, that I'm taking on September 4. So fingers crossed I can just crank through all these and become an enterprise administrator expert.
Ooh, well, I mean, that'll certainly be fun.
Yeah, it will. When it comes to email, Outlook and Office 365 are fantastic. But sometimes there are things you'd like to do that aren't implemented. Sperry Software creates Outlook add-ins and Office 365 services that fill in these gaps. For instance, there are Outlook add-ins to automatically print emails and/or attachments, save emails to PDF, send out recurring emails, or how about a warning when you're going to do a reply to all instead of a normal reply? Find these and many more email productivity solutions. Get started today by visiting www.sperrysoftware.com/cloudIT. And then we got some other exciting news today too. We both got emails at about the same time from Microsoft about an upcoming conference.
Yeah, we're going to go down to Ignite. We're going to have to figure out how to live our lives down there. It's it's an interesting thing because, you know, you fill out the, you know, the session forms and you try and figure all that stuff out and do it. We typically only do this podcast for 30 minutes, but yep. Microsoft doesn't have a 30-minute podcast block in the podcast center, it appears, this year. So we had to submit hour-long sessions to go in the session catalog for podcasts. So we're going to have to figure out how to talk a little bit longer, maybe, I think. And then because you weren't guaranteed to get a ticket for a co-presenter, we both had to put in different sessions and then hope that we could both get picked across all of our sessions. So it turns out that we have to do two podcasts for the podcast. And then, I don't know about you, I ended up with one other session. So I think that's manageable, right? Theoretically, I would only have three for the week, my two plus the extra podcast with you. But I think you ended up with a few more than I did.
Yes, I might even rope you into helping me with some of mine. So, because I got the one podcast session too. So the same 60-minute one. But then I ended up with two of the unconference sessions, which are 75 minutes. So I will have four total, the two podcast ones that we'll do together, and then two of these unconference sessions, which will be interesting. I think this is new. They haven't done this at Ignite before. So like you said, we submitted a bunch because you could submit up to five. Like, I think we had talked about that when we went over all this with our podcast when we talked to Anna. So I was like, I'll just submit five. And if one or two of them get picked, great. I ended up with three of them picked and you ended up with a couple picked. So it will be a busy week at Ignite.
Yeah, you just kind of like go in and start filling stuff out and then all of a sudden they pick sessions and you're like, oh, that's cool.
Yes, but it will be fun. I'm excited. This is the first time doing something there that is not the podcast. So we've done the podcast there 2 or 3 years now. 2 years, I think. I don't know. I lose track. So this is the first time actually doing some type of session at Ignite. So I was excited. We were actually already talking to Anna today and going to have her back on to talk more about news around Ignite as it gets closer. That first interview, we kind of dealt with more submitting for sessions. So I think hopefully this next session, we can talk more about attending Ignite and how to approach the conference and a bunch of news that will apply to probably a little bit broader audience about the Ignite conference in general. And keep an eye out. We might talk more about these unconference sessions once we nail everything down and get the dates for the podcast when we'll be doing those live and on video. So if you haven't seen us, you get to see our ugly mugs, or at least mine. I guess I won't speak to yours. You can speak to your own appearances.
No, I would prefer to stay hidden behind the microphone. It's okay.
You are not going to be able to stay hidden. People will see you.
Maybe we can put like one of those like deep fake filters on. Did you see that, the Bill Hader, the deepfake?
No, I did not. Sorry.
I'll have to put a link in the show notes for everybody, but he does like a Tom Cruise and a Seth Rogen impersonation. And if you've never seen a deepfake, you know, where somebody's face kind of instantly morphs into another one. And this is probably one of the most disturbing ones I've seen, because, you know, he's sitting there and he's talking as himself. And as he transitions in and out of his impersonations, his face just completely changes along the way. It's a very disturbing kind of thing.
Wow. I will have to go watch that. We will definitely add a link to the show notes. So that's kind of what's going on in the lives of Scott and Ben. Now, should we talk about what's going on in the lives of Azure today?
Azure.
I don't have a whole lot of Microsoft 365 stuff today. I think you have some Azure stuff around Azure Migrate. Since I migrated my office around, maybe we can talk about Azure Migrate a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's totally doable. So I've been working on a new class, which I think is going to be super duper fun. It is kind of a big multi-day excursion into Azure migrations and getting attendees or students hands-on with some of the new Azure Migrate tooling and figuring out kind of what's going on there. How can we potentially do like lift and shift or rehost of older workloads and pick up some of the new changes along the way? Because Microsoft a couple weeks ago kind of relaunched Azure Migrate, or more specifically kind of the Azure Migration Center. So there's a couple different things that kind of happened along the way there, where Azure Migrate V1, or what was sitting out there up until a couple weeks ago, it was able to do assessments for VMware, but it couldn't do physical servers, it couldn't do Hyper-Vs, so you still potentially had some work you had to do to go figure out your environments. It wasn't an integrated end-to-end migration experience. So what I mean there is you could do assessments in Azure Migrate and, you know, things like cost analysis, server dependencies, and trying to get your house in order before you kind of move these workloads up to Azure or up to the cloud. But then when you were actually ready to migrate, you had to go over to another tool, do some more configuration, or, you know, if you're going to stay first party, that would mean maybe going to Azure Site Recovery or ASR, or going to a third party tool or whatever's happening along the way. So what Microsoft has done with Azure Migrate V2 is they've built an end-to-end migration experience directly into Azure Migrate as a service within the Azure portal. So if you think about just going to the Azure portal, you know, you go to portal.azure.com and you spin up a new Azure Migrate service and then you create a migration project. Well, the very first thing you'll do is select your assessment tools. And now you're not locked into just Microsoft assessment tools. They've actually got a series of tools that you can go ahead and select from when you're thinking about what that assessment is going to look like for you. So you might not want to use Microsoft's tool, but you might want to leverage Azure Migrate to help you out just to kind of get a consolidated migration architecture, pipeline, factory, whatever it is going along the way. So there's a bunch of third-party tools that you can use in there. You know, you're not locked into just Microsoft anymore. And then once you've assessed, you can go ahead and actually do your migrations as well directly through Azure Migrate. And I just want to be careful here. You're not actually doing the migrations through Azure Migrate. There's still back-end tooling. So if you're going to stay Microsoft first party, it is still technically Azure Site Recovery that is actually doing the migration for you. But now there's been a UI wrapped on top of ASR that's directly integrated into the Migration Center and the Azure Migrate service so that you can kind of see everything in there and just have one-stop shopping as you're going out and putting these workloads together, which is pretty nice and pretty seamless. You know, they've kind of cleaned up a bunch of blockers that might have been there for folks. So Azure Migrate V2 was a preview service. You know, people were waiting for it and you had to get your subscriptions whitelisted. And there was potentially a little bit of work that you had to do along the way there. So a lot of that stuff is gone now. It's just kind of GA'd, hanging out, ready to go. And it's just a nice kind of, like I said, smooth onboarding, integrated experience that you can have to get going with the service and figure out what you need to do. So does VMware, like I said, it did that in V1. Now in V2, it does Hyper-V as well. Still no support within Azure Migrate as a first-party assessment tool for on-premises servers. There's certainly third-party tools that can help you there. Maybe you still go old school and do something like MAP toolkit, you know, Microsoft Assessment and Planning Toolkit, something like that.
Okay. As IT professionals in the cloud era, sometimes it feels like we don't speak the same language as the rest of the organization. So when stakeholders from finance or other departments start asking about a specific project or team's Azure costs, they don't always realize how much work is involved in obtaining that information, sifting through cluttered CSVs and a complex mess of metadata in order to manually create custom views and reports. It's a real headache. On top of helping you understand and reduce your organization's overall Azure spend, ShareGate Overcast lets you group resources into meaningful cost hubs and map them to real-world business scenarios. This way, you can track costs in the way that makes most sense with your corporate structure, whether it's by product, business unit, team, or otherwise. It's a flexible, intuitive, and business-friendly way of tracking Azure infrastructure costs, and it's only available in ShareGate Overcast. Find out more on ShareGate.com/ITPro.
So because of those back-end services that it's using, my first thing when I see all these services is I'm like, oh, so how much is this actually going to cost me? And it says the Azure Migrate pricing is free at no available charge, but you can incur charges for ISV assessments, migration tools you use while using Azure Migrate. So that's when, like, you're going to go in, you set up the service, you're not going to get charged for it. But then when you start using like Azure Site Recovery or some of these third parties, because you're spinning those up in the background, those are where you're going to actually incur your cost then when leveraging Azure Migrate.
Yeah, so it's kind of like anything else. You can potentially feel like you're maybe getting nickeled and dimed or chipped away at for money if you don't take the time to understand the cost of all these little services in the back end. But I think it's really manageable. And the way Microsoft has built it out, it's especially manageable because if you can get your migrations done with a decent velocity, either you don't have a lot of things to migrate, or you can hit a decent cadence with a bunch of things. Like you can actually build kind of a factory or a process around that migration. For the most part, as long as you can get your migration done in 180 days, you got roughly 6 months. As long as you can get your entire migration done and finalize it, really the only cost that you'll have out there if you're using first-party tooling, beyond the compute that you spin up, because we're talking about migrating things into Azure, right? So you migrate a VM, yep. You turn the VM, you got to pay for the VM. Well, you've got to pay for things like storage with ASR, but really a lot of the cost with ASR isn't in the tooling, it's in the storage that comes with it. And you'll probably have some networking that you need to think about. Like if you're coming from on-prem to Azure, you know, you're probably going to want to have some type of tunnel between you and Azure. Like if you're collapsing a data center, that's going to be something like ExpressRoute. So yes, there's going to be a cost for the ExpressRoute circuit. It needs to be sized properly. You know, you got to go through and do that rationalization. But I think they've really made the pricing very compelling if you're able to get up into Azure kind of in the amount of time allotted within those kind of quote unquote free tiers. And a lot of that extends into other tooling as well. Like it's not just Azure Migrate for the assessments, right? Because you need that part, but you think about maybe other specific migration tooling, something like you're going to migrate databases. You can actually turn on database migration service, which has two SKUs. It has a standard SKU and a premium SKU. you can actually use the standard SKU for free if you can migrate quick enough, which is kind of crazy. They're just going to give you access to all that compute, you know, on their end, that managed compute, so that you can go ahead and get into the cloud faster. Like I said, yes, you're going to consume once you're in the cloud, but that's why you're migrating anyway, right? So hopefully you've accounted for that cost.
Right. Well, it looks like premium for the Azure SQL or Azure database migration, even that's not bad. It's like 37 cents an hour. So as long as you're not doing it for crazy amounts of time, it's a fairly reasonable cost. I understand some people have monstrous databases or migrations that might run for a while, but even that doesn't look bad, which kind of brings me into that other question. We kind of talked about the IaaS stuff, the migrating servers, Hyper-V, VMware, but some of these other services too with Azure Migrate tie into what we just said, the databases, or it looks like there's the app service, migration assistant, and there's some other things that are kind of on the fringe of IaaS, or some of those more services that you can migrate some of your on-prem workloads to as well using Azure Migrate.
Yeah, because it's this integrated hub, right? It's not just about virtual machines. It's about helping you potentially rehost, refactor, and transform workloads. So it might be a virtual machine. It might just be storage. It could be a database. It might even be something like a web app. Even if that web app sits on-prem and it needs to be assessed, you might be able to use like the web app migration tooling and the wrapper that's in Azure Migrate to actually kind of do a one-click migration up to Azure as well. So you do have a couple options in there when it comes to putting some of that stuff together and getting it to where it needs to be.
Yeah, looking at this app service one, because that one just intrigued me and I clicked into it. I have never used it, but it looks like a couple options. If you have a public URL, you can go put that in, assess your public site. If you do have internal sites, there's a tool you can download to look at internal sites and then use this migration assessment for .NET apps, for PHP apps, to migrate these up to that Azure app service.
Yep. So a couple of things there that kind of throw people off I don't know if it throws other people off, but stuff like that throws me off. So when you go to just the kind of appmigration.microsoft.com and you say, hey, I want to assess a web app, and you're looking at it, you'll see like the download button right there. Like, it can only assess SSL protected sites right now. So if your site's internal only, it's not projected to the internet, things like that, you just download this tool and go ahead and install it. I've installed it on stuff as old as server 2008 R2. Like, I don't know what exactly the requirements are for it, but it installs on some older stuff as well. So it is possible to kind of go in there and assess and see what happens with it. It is for a pure kind of migration along the way. So it's kind of like just getting you into a native app service, kind of like the code or file-based app service. You know, if you've got static websites, maybe those are more appropriate for storage. If you're looking at maybe transforming what is a dynamic website and hosting it in a container or something like that, maybe you want to do that transformation on-prem and then load that into app service for containers or AKS or things like that, right? It's not a like magic bullet or a one-click solution all the time. One of the things I found with like stuff like that is really we're talking about at least the assessment phase. Like, help me get through that and make it less painful, because if the assessment can call out the things that are wrong for me, I can go and start to triage those and fix those. I've seen like website migrations where people have maybe strange protocols turned on in IIS. Like, they did more than just a TCP. They've got whatever lit up. So you run that assessment tool and it says, oh, you're using blah, blah, blah. And you go like, oh, why are we using that? We don't need it. Just turn it off, right? Test it. Okay, it's still works good, run the assessment again and iterate through and kind of get through it that way. So even if you're not going to use the tools to migrate, it is good to just go through and do an assessment and understand a little bit of what's going on there.
Nifty. So ISV tools, obviously that's a question too that comes up. It supports ISVs, but it looks like if you are going to use, if some of those ISVs require licenses, there's pricing associated with those ISVs. It doesn't look like there's integration there where it gets like billed back to you through Azure, but you have to go make sure you purchase licenses from those ISVs, understand how those ISVs, those third-party migration and assessment products are going to work. And then once you take care of everything on the ISV side, you can start leveraging it for those Azure migrations or those migrations using the Azure Migrate service?
Right. So Microsoft has worked with a body of ISVs to go ahead and integrate with the Azure Migrate API kind of management plane, right? So they can inject that analysis and you can have this kind of single hub or single dashboard to go to and get that information. So there is almost certainly external licensing that's going to be needed there, right? Microsoft is just providing an API for those ISVs to integrate with. If you're already working with them, maybe you got to go figure out something new or see what's going on. You know, not to call anyone out specifically, but you know, just to like pull up the page for assessments today, that's going to be companies like Cloudamize, Device42, Turbonomic, Unify Cloud, and Cornet Tech are the current ones on the list right now. So if you already have licensing with them, you might go, hey, let's see if we can light this up and start doing Azure assessments directly with inside of Azure Migrate. Like if you're happy with your current assessment tool and it's not tied into Azure Migrate, no one's saying you have to bring it over here either. It's just a different way to integrate with a different control plane or management plane, right? To run through those assessments and get yourself to where you need to be. And then the thing to keep in mind with ISVs is there's going to be a different set of ISVs across the migration lifecycle. So typically we kind of look at things as let's do an assessment, and assess is kind of our first phase. Phase two is migrate. And then phase three is typically something around optimization, operationalization, security, things like that. So the tools that are available in assessment, those aren't necessarily going to be the same tools that are available for migration. You might go to another vendor or pick a different set of tools. Like you might do your assessment with Turbonomic because you already have a relationship with them. And you might choose to do your server migration using ASR with the Migrate Hub wrapped on top of it. So you do get kind of this flexibility in there if you want it.
Got it. Well, it looks like too, when you go look at some of the documentation here, and we can link to the ISV integration, they do list all of that out as this is the ISV and these are the features that they offer, whether it's assess, one of them is assess and migrate, one of them is just migrate. So like you said, different ISVs might be leveraged for different aspects of that whole process, that roadmap as you go from being on-prem to being fully in the cloud. So you might have to pick and choose, look at who offers what and what you may need if you don't have some of these already.
Yeah, you get to pick and choose. I think kind of the story here, if you're going to approach it as a customer, is you get to kind of choose your own adventure. There's no one saying that you have to use Microsoft's tooling to be successful at it. It may be that they're not the right tool for the right job based on your implementation and where you sit and the workloads you run and the types of things you do. But, you know, they've built out this integration plane for these ISVs because let's face it, the goal is to get you into Azure. How you get there, it's kind of important, but it's not the most important thing, right? The most important thing is that you get to the other side and you start consuming and you have your monthly spend, and you know, you're spinning up new resources and you're generally thinking your life is better and more secure and faster and stronger and all that good stuff.
You're generally thinking that. No, that's a guarantee, right? Your life is going to be better. It's not just a general thinking.
Well,
because
it depends on who you talk to.
Because the cloud is always better. Opsgility is disrupting cloud training as we know it with their on-demand platform, SkillMeUp. Their new design focuses on a user flow to better support role-based learning paths with these great new features. Real-time, hands-on labs are now included with each subscription to build your skills competence. Hundreds of cloud courses with more added daily to transform your skills for today's cloud-first careers. Role-based learning paths guide you through associated level courses in an easy-to-view layout and tracker. Microsoft Azure and Microsoft 365 certification prep courses and labs to support you leading up to exam day. Learn more and start your free 3-day trial at www.skillmeup.com. All right. Well, that was informative. Again, this is another one of those I haven't spent a ton of time with. You working on the class filled me in. Anything else with Azure Migrate people should know about, learn about, you should cover that I did not catch as I perused the documentation and the site and the information around Azure Migrate?
I think the biggest thing with it is Microsoft did a big revamp of the documentation when they released V2. So I know that we're all kind of admins, IT pros, you know, we want to get in, and we're technologists at the end of the day, no matter what your role is. So you want to get in and you want to start clicking the buttons and saying like, okay, what happens if I just next my way through this? What's going to break? What's going to go wrong? I don't necessarily recommend doing that with this tooling. Like, the documentation's pretty good, and it's really good in some cases, depending on which piece you're using. It's worth spending the time to kind of step away from the keyboard, take the hands off it, and scroll through some of the documentation and understand your scenario and what you're and where you're sitting, right? Because if you want to go ahead and do a Hyper-V migration versus a VMware migration, you go, oh, cool, I can do it all with Azure Migrate, and then you just kind of end up in this state where you miss a little bit of the nuance along the way, maybe for like prerequisites or prep for your environment. So maybe you need to do things with permissions, you need to download certain versions of certain appliances. Getting all that stuff up and running and in place is going to make sure that you have a smooth assessment. And the smoother your assessment is, the quicker you can accelerate into a migration along the way. The other thing I would call out about Azure Migrate V2 right now is, while it is a GA product, nobody at Microsoft, don't punch me or anything, it's not a complete product. So what I mean there is, it still has some rough edges. Like, what was I trying to do? The other day I was trying to do DMS assessments. So database migration service. So theoretically you can go into the hub and you can click, hey, I would like to use DMS as my assessment tool for this database. And it opens up the blade to create a DMS service. You fill in all your information, you hit okay, nothing happens. You're like, oh, cool. It never submits the deployment. No matter what you do, no matter what browser you use, no matter what's going on, no matter what subscription you're in, this thing just does not work. But you can absolutely go over to like database migration service as a thing on its own and just spin up a new database migration service resource and start working with that and get it to where it needs to be. So don't let the rough edges kind of scare you away, I think is another thing to think about as you're getting into it. You might hit those walls, but really they all have way around them and there's a door you can open and get through. It's not the end of the world, because this is just a wrapper for other tools that already existed and are proven and known to work.
Got it. Very cool. Well, and I think that, like, even the whole rough edges, I think that applies more and more to the cloud as a whole. With the faster iterations, faster deployments, I feel like less and less stuff comes out perfect. There's always rough edges, and if you can work around it, get around it for a little bit, it'll be fixed, updated, tweaked shortly. You're not going to have to wait 3 years for the next version for those rough edges to be smoothed out.
Yeah.
In theory, right?
Well, it's moving very, very fast. And I think you'll continue to see a lot of documentation updates and kind of direct updates in there as this is all put together and kind of brought to the forefront. There's going to be a big focus in general. Like, we're starting to see more of a focus from the field on infrastructure because, hey, like rehosting and realistically helping customers get off some of these older workloads. Even if you migrate like an end-of-life workload over to Azure and you intend to stay on that end-of-life workload for just a little bit longer, it's potentially worth it just to have the security fixes and some of the other things that might come along the way with that, right? To have access to, you know, that better, faster, stronger place for your stuff to live. So yes. I think you'll see like more and more of this and more improvements driven into it over time at a pretty rapid pace.
Yes. Can we say Windows Server 2008 to Azure? Because that one end of life's at the end of this year, which has led to some SharePoint work for me that's running on 2008. But that is a whole other topic. Suppose we could have done that.
Yeah. So you can absolutely go ahead and bring that stuff forward. I recommend reading the support matrices. Like, there's all sorts of things that you technically can't do in Azure, but you're 100% allowed to do if you migrate. You know, one of those would be like running 32-bit workloads. You know, you can't stand up a 32-bit virtual machine from the gallery, but if you migrate an x86 or 32-bit machine from on-prem to Azure, Microsoft will gladly let you run it. Like, bring that Server 2008 or Server 2008 R2, go ahead and bring it up to Azure. They'll let you run 32-bit and you'll get the security updates and things just because you're running it in their data centers.
Got it. Beautiful. Great. Well, good topics today, Scott. It was interesting about Azure Migrate and our exciting Ignite announcements and Key Largo and new floors. I think that's a summary of today's episode. So go enjoy the rest of your day. I've got some meetings to go jump on and some stuff to finish up, and we will talk to you again next week.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Ben.
All right. Thanks, Scott.
If you enjoyed the podcast, go leave us a 5-star rating in iTunes. It helps to get the word out so more IT pros can learn about Office 365 and Azure. If you have any questions you want us to address on the show or feedback about the show, feel free to reach out via our website, Twitter, or Facebook. Thanks again for listening and have a great day.